All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another great edition of Business with Roy, with none other than my good pal, Roy Red, coming to us live from Los Angeles, California. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Can't complain. It's a rainy day here in Los Angeles, a rare one. It was raining yesterday. My energy was low because I don't like the rain, so I'm trying to make it through it. It's overcast. I like to see the sun, man.
And you would like Namibia.
Well, yeah, a lot of
sun here. Well, today, Roy, what I want to talk about is scaling business, whether it's our personal business, your industry, and just for any of the listeners, or even just on an individual level to scale yourself. And sort of my motivation for today's topic is, you know, all the scaling that I've been seeing lately in the AI industry. It feels like every other day I'm reading about Anthropic, OpenAI, whoever it is, raised another $100 billion for whatever. So I'd like to bring that down. You think it's fake money?
Well, money's fake anyway, but it's even more fake what these guys be doing, but we won't go there. We'll leave them alone. Hire me. Hey, if you guys want to give me some money, give me some money. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make money. But public money. It's funny because if one, OpenAI was giving money to NVIDIA, and NVIDIA was taking that. No, no. NVIDIA was giving OpenAI money, and OpenAI was using that money to buy their chips or their stocks or something. And they were doing the other to boost the stocks. They were, you know, lying.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Hold on, let me pull it up so we can get the specifics for the listeners. I think this is what you're talking about. First it starts with NVIDIA to invest up to $100 billion in OpenAI, linking two artificial intelligence titans. Then it says Oracle and OpenAI signed $300 billion cloud deal. Then it says Oracle to buy $40 billion of NVIDIA chips for OpenAI's new US data center.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a loop of just money flowing around.
It ain't no real money being made. It's just, it's just how they move it. How they make it look good.
Yeah.
It's the stock prices. It's crazy. And I, you know, it's hard because I know how it really works and how money is really made. So it's annoying, you know, and they say with great wisdom comes great grief. When you really know what this stuff is and how it moves and who's controlling it, you're going to realize it's fake, and then you're going to realize, damn, I ain't even got none of the fake stuff. This is crazy.
So you don't believe in the AI boom, so to say. You think it's going to burst now sooner or later?
No, it's a boom. It's going to do well. It's going to grow. And a lot of money will be made. It's just fake money. That's all.
Yeah.
I think that actually helps people when they realize this is a game with fake money. It's literally like Monopoly money. It's a game and you just got to play. And if you're able to cheat without getting caught and because you're at the top like that, then that's what they do.
Yeah. Unlike, like your friend Bill Belichick.
Oh man. I can't believe he didn't get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, that was crazy.
Has he ever been caught cheating, man? They thought he was cheating. Josh McDaniels got caught cheating, and he's a coach for the Patriots still, so.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if they do the same to Tom.
They better not. They better Tom like that. I love Tom.
Nah, but okay. So today I want to talk about, like I said, scaling business. So maybe we can start with, maybe we'll start with your personal experience with scaling the current business you're in now. Maybe if you scaled other businesses beforehand, like what are the key tenets? Well, actually, no, first let's start with what does scaling a business mean? Let's start there.
Scaling is just making a business more money, more efficient, and doing that with you and your employees working as least as possible. One, you want to get off the org chart, which means you don't want to be working in the business. I have so many businesses that we go to try to buy and they're working 12, 16 hours in the business. You don't want to be working in the business. You want to be working on the business. So scale is how to make more money, be more efficient. And it's really those two things. And what the outcome of that, it would be people working less because the system
worked
perfectly.
And so, as we were just talking about AI, I would strongly say AI has a role to play in that, right?
Yeah, you can make, I mean, in the past, machine learning, you could do systems by connecting machines and let them talk. You know, you have APIs and all that, and we still have that today. But now with AI, you could take away a lot of the human element because AI could think through stuff, right? So for example, I had my, Tiffany, my assistant Tiffany, which is, go through, banks to find new banks. And I also had her go through looking for signals of motivated sellers, in the marketplace so I could reach out to them to try to buy their business or help them, do what they do. And so we had to connect the API called, SERP. But after that was connected, the AI was able to go and find signals. Which no system could have done that before. You could have connected it, but then you still would have had to go look, right? This was able to look and see signals, and I told it what the signals are, so you still have to teach it. It's still like a child. But it was able to see them, put them in a CSV, and then I could take those and load them up into my email, my mass email sender, my code email sender. So AI helps tremendously. But to answer your question, well, I guess you're going to get into how to scale a business, but yeah, AI helps a lot, like to another level.
Yeah, most definitely. So let's now talk about your personal experience with scaling a business. What in your experience are like the core tenets, so to say, of scaling a business?
Yeah. Well, when you get into business, I'll give you guys a PhD on business right now. I'll give you something better than a professor who's never ran a business, but they're teaching business at the school. I'll give you better than what he'll teach you. A business is literally this. You look at every business as three businesses. The first business is your before unit. The second business is your during unit. And the third business is your after unit. Okay. And the before unit, this is where you got to get traffic. And you have to get leads. Okay. This is how you're getting out and getting people to know who you are, see who you are, and then come into your business. Okay. So you want to create, to scale that, you want to create a system that consistently does that without you being there all the time. So with me, that's my email list, draw up, create the list and put the list into my cold email finder. Right. The second business is your during unit. This is when you actually talk to the customer. It's just, and it could be different for whatever business you got. It's going to be in store or it's going to be on the phone or it might be through text, whatever works the best, right? And this is where you're going to have less scale because you're going to have to do some thinking. People want you to be personable. They don't want to just talk to a machine all the time. So this is where you're going to work the most. And this is where your employees are going to work the most. Okay. So this is where they buy. This is where you give them an experience where you make them feel good. And then there's a lot of money in the after unit and a lot of businesses actually don't cultivate the after unit. And that's referrals, reviews, and follow-up business. Are you reaching out to people? Make sure they leave reviews. Are you getting referrals? For example, when I speak on a stage and I do a good job and the event planner is like, you did such a good job. Thank you. I might do some things to make them feel good because I'm still in the during unit. But then when I leave that next couple of days or a week later, when things start to come down and the energy comes down from the event, I always email the event planner and said, hey, thank you so much for bringing me in. I send them a free gift, maybe a book or different things, usually one of my books and a book that's not one of mine, something I think they'll like. And I say, hey, if you have 3 to 5 event planners that you know could use a speaker like me, would you do me a favor and just connect me? That's 3 to 5 new hot leads of events that I could do. So that's the after. Yeah. Are you getting reviews? Are you getting referrals? If people just implemented a referral program, they could probably double their money overnight because guess who's most likely to buy, Hende? People who bought already. Mm-hmm. They already bought. You already earned their trust. You already brought them through your before unit and during unit. So in the after unit, they're easy to get referrals because their friends, their family, and people who trust them, look up to them, will trust them and come to you from those referrals.
Yeah. So now in those three phases, which is the most difficult, so to say, to be in of the three?
I would say it depends on where you are in your business, but from coaching businesses over the years, the part that seems to be most difficult, that business owners spend the most money, that business owner hire a lot of kids. So if you guys are young and you want to make some money, this is where business owners need help. That's getting traffic and leads, like leads that can convert into actual money. That is probably the hardest part for most business owners because they don't know how to do it. And they're working in the business. They don't have time to be posting flyers. They don't have time to be sending emails. They don't have time to be doing Instagram and TikTok or whatever it is that's going to bring in that traffic and leads, ads, whatever that is. They don't want to spend money on that. And so that's why a lot of the businesses that are doing well have been around 10, 15, 20 years, because now the word of mouth has been so long that they don't have to either focus on the lead generation part. But if I buy a business, that's been around 20 years, they're not focusing on the lead gen part anymore, but they have so many good referrals, so many good reviews and people that are word of mouth that they're still running a big business. I can easily grow that business by going back and improving and recouping the traffic and lead side of the business. So anytime you look at a business and you want to see how good they're doing or how I can help that business or how I can scale that business, I'm going to look at the leads, traffic. I'm going to look at what can I improve during, and then is there referrals or reviews that we can be? And if you just, if you just take those three and just do more and systemize it with AI or machine learning or whatever you can do, but you want to scale with personal scaling. Like my email, feel personal, even though the not, you know, how can you do that? So then, you know, moving forward, I'm always looking for new technology that can scale personalization. Like there's one that's really good where you can send mass handwritten letters. The machine handwrites it, makes it look handwritten, and you can send it a list of hundreds or thousands and it'll mail those out. So that's mass with a personal touch, right?
And so,
systems, that's the only time systems, kind of mess up and AI mess up is when it doesn't have a personal touch. It has to feel human.
Right. And, in the before stage, do you set a goal as to like where, maybe how many leads or whatever it is that you're trying to reshoot, or do you just try to get as many as you can at any moment in time?
Well, at first you just want to get as many as you can because you want to get customers so you can start to have some kind of content of you doing your business, like demonstration. That'll be me on stage, or that'll be me going look at businesses, whatever it is. You always want some demonstration because people will go look at you. This is why you need content as well. After they see you, I reach out to them in email. They're going to go look at Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever it is that they consume content. They're going to go look there. So you want to be everywhere that content is. That's called positioning. You want to be in all those places because people will check your website and all that stuff. But at first you just need people in the door. And then as you get better and get better, you'll know what to do to make it better and better. But at first, you just need people in the door. And then you can improve on that. You're going to boost what's called a conversion rate. And that's just from this traffic, if you get 100, how many of these 100 actually come in as leads? From these leads, if you get 30 out of that 100, how many of these actually turn into customers? And then you know how much traffic you need. And then you can figure out how you can improve it going over time. I have a quick story on that. It was this girl, that I knew. She had cancer and she made, beanies, these nice looking beanies to cover cancer patients' heads because they were cold, right? Mm-hmm. So she had a, I believe she's making $2 million a year on that business. And so I was just like, oh, okay, how are you? And I was still learning at the time. So I just wanted to help her for free. I didn't even talk to her about helping her. I was just like, where are you getting your traffic and leads from? She's like, oh, they all come to this website. And this page here is called a landing page. And I'm like, okay, I know what a landing page is. And she said, and then they sign up here and then they go through a funnel and then they can get a beanie. And I go, oh, interesting. You have a $2 million business on this terrible website. That's what I was thinking in my head. The website wasn't nice.
Because
a landing page should convert anywhere from 5 to 10%, but hers was bad. And so I said, oh, what's the conversion rate on this landing page? And she was like, conversion rate? I don't know what that is. I don't know. And so I was like, where did you get the traffic from? And she was just getting traffic from doing interviews and different stuff. And so I said, okay, go find that out. Let me know. Come back. Her conversion rate was like less than 1%, like 0.8%. And I'm like, wow, you have a 1% conversion rate. What would
happen? She was making $2 million by accident, basically. Yeah,
basically. Well, that's business. Business is luck. A lot of it is luck and just finding the right mixture.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a strong story, which is, a strong positioning and it's strong. And so if I took that 1% conversion rate and made it 2%, what did she do to her business?
Doubles
her business from 2 million to 4 million. So I told her, I said, oh, aren't you glad you talked to me? She said, why? I said, this page, if you changed it to what I tell you to do, right now you have a $2 million business with a 1% conversion rate. If we make that 2%, you will go from making 2 million to 4 million. But I'm pretty sure you should be able to get 5 to 8% with the page we make. And she was like, really? It's like, yes. So she changed the page. She didn't go 5 to 8%, but she went to like just under 4. So she like more than doubled her business by a ton from 1 million to, just over $4 million in revenue. So,
yeah.
Anytime you grow a business, and that's what scaling is growing, right? There's only two ways to grow a business. That's changing the price, which is making the price more expensive, or being able to get whatever it is you sell cheaper. And then two is fixing business processes. And anybody can fix any business processes if they just look at the before unit, everything it entails, the during unit, everything it entails, and the after unit, everything it entails, and see how can you make it more efficient? How can you automate it? How can you do it quicker, do it better, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. So this girl that we're speaking about now, is she an example of someone that was working in the business? I assume she was like really focused on, was she hand making the beanies?
Yeah, she was. Her and some friends, they were, hand making them, and that's all she did all day was, crochet and make the beanies. And she was selling them for a lot of money because, they had emotions attached to them because they were for cancer.
Yes.
So every day, she was making them. I think even she started making them herself. And then I think she had to start making them a different way later because she started selling so many. But, back then, I don't know if she's still alive. I haven't talked to her in a long time, but I know she only had a few years to live. So I don't know how she's doing today, but yeah, she was crushing it.
Yeah. So she was an example of someone that was like focused on working in the business instead of on the business.
Yeah. And, she doesn't know business. She just got extremely lucky. And she, some people, even though they understand that they're working in the business, they love it. And she loved doing that. So if you love doing it, it's fine. You can work in the business, but you still need to work on the business as well. And she just got extremely lucky and was coming around a time where people were online buying stuff a lot and e-commerce were always be huge, but, In those times, if you had a good product and you were selling it online, you could really make good money.
Yeah. So I want us to dive deeper into this, working on the business versus in the business, right? As a business owner, do you think you can scale without ever working on the business? Or do you have to, if you're so ingrained in the business, do you have to get to a point where you hire someone to work on your business maybe?
Yeah. Well, two things. One, you can scale. Even if you're working in it, you could scale in different ways. If you ever want to sell your business, to increase the multiple about 2 times more, you need to have a manager running the business. Because here's the problem. If you're working in the business and you probably have some sauce that nobody else could replicate, right?
Yeah.
So if you're working in the business and everyone just loves you and they go to you, and out of anyone they can go on Namibia, they go to you because they like you. When you sell, they may not like the next guy, so then they may not go anymore. And so private equity, strategic buyers, people like me, we know this. And so we will be like, I don't feel totally safe buying this business until you could put a manager in and prove to me that this business is going to make money without you working in it all the time, right? So that's one of the things. But there's so many ways you could scale. You could scale even though you're working in the business, but if you really want to scale, you're going to have to always, replace yourself. And you replace yourself by managing people, managing systems, and managing yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I look at someone like Elon. I think he's a good example of that. Like putting the right people in place and just, getting things done pretty much in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. And it takes money. So that's why it's hard, kind of hard to grow, because you're going to have to, to get a good manager, especially here in America, you're going to need 80 to 100,000 extra a year to give someone. But, but if you need that 80 or 100,000, you could always take that out as a loan, because your multiple when you sell is going to be millions more, usually.
Yeah.
So it's just knowing what to do, how to do it.
Mm-hmm. So, do you have in your business acquisition journey, do you have a story you can share about a business that maybe you acquired, you scaled, and then either you sold it or it just continued thriving from where it began?
Let me give you, someone in my mastermind's, example. Cause I bought one company. We're still buying more. I'll give an example of mine of what I'm doing right now. We just got accepted on a company an option to buy in 2 years. So all an option means instead of buying it now, we're going to buy it in 2 years. And the reason why we're going to do that is because he is working in the business, not on it. So I'm going to help him scale. And when we scale to the point where I won't have to work in the business when we buy it, then we'll buy the business. So I took an option to buy it in 2 years, and I'm just giving myself about 2 years.
You say his customers love combos, right? For just $299 Namibian dollars, you can get 5 kilograms each of the following essential staple food. Nice rice, parboiled rice, champion super maize meal, marathon brown sugar, and marathon white sugar, plus Bokoma Fekto flour. That's $299 Namibian dollars for 5 5-kilogram essential products. Yes, we all save at You Save.
So I took an option to buy it in 2 years, and I'm just giving myself about 2 years. So here's what I'm doing. I'm going to come in. I'm going to look at everything. I'm going to see what routes they have. Can we improve on the routes so they use less gas, so they get to their deals faster, to the sites faster, whatever it is. And I won't say what industry it is, but let's just say it's part of plumbing. It's part of plumbing.
Okay.
So they got to go to houses. So we're going to fix the routes. We're going to look at employees' pay. Can we boost employee pay and still get more out of the employee, right? That's one thing that a lot of business owners don't realize is your employees will never care about this like you do. But if you can boost their pay a little bit, give them some incentive, they can do really, really good. And a lot of businesses have a genius working for them who they just don't know it's a genius because they're not looking at them. They're not checking to see how smart they are. They're not checking to see if they have ideas. Google gave their employees time to work on whatever idea they wanted. And that's how Google got Gmail. That's how Google got G Drive. These employees, when they were able to work on their own, created crazy ideas, great ideas, because everyone has one or two. If you have 10 employees, you have one or two geniuses or people who are better than you actually working for you. They're just probably wired a little different. Okay. So we got to go look at the employees. Then we're going to see what AI systems can we put in? Can we put in an app where the customers can just go on the app and order a job done? They can see where the driver is, like Uber or DoorDash, stuff like that. Where is the money going? How can we put money in different areas? How can we get more leads? Does the business have good search engine optimization on Google? Can we set a referral program where some people refer people, maybe they can get a discount next time? We're going to go in and look at all that stuff, and anything we can implement to make more money or take away employees or take away the guy working in the business, we will change. And so, I'm currently doing that now. And then we'll probably buy the business in 2 years if we're able to execute properly.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting, especially on the employee side about increasing their pay to sort of increase their output as well. Because, you know, conventionally people would think to scale when it comes to employees, maybe you need to cut a few people.
It's okay. Just
reduce salaries and things like that. So it's interesting that you brought up that method.
No, yeah. Actually, Hyundai is easy. Here's a, concept I think people should think. Things that are hard are complex, but complexity is just simplicity multiplied. All you need to do is make things simple. And the way to make things simple is a process I call first principle thinking, where you keep doing what's called grounding and you figure it out. Okay. What does that idea need to be sustained? And you keep going down and down and down and down until you get to the first principle that matters. And that's usually simple. It's usually basics every single time. Like if you talk about working out and diet, these all this complex stuff. You got Dr. Rhonda Patrick and Huberman and, oh, you want to take this and the dopamines and all this. And when you get down to it, it's just like, it's always just do this, something simple, right? And so if you use first principle thinking and just look at a business and say, how can I make this simple? And to get the result I want, inputs and outputs, like we talked about on past episodes. That's all you need to do. And then you could just implement it and you test. And if it does better, then you keep it and it's a constant growth and constant implementation and reiterate.
Most definitely. Most definitely. I think that's, something I never really thought about, to be honest. So I'm glad you gave us that insight. And help the listeners also take that in, because I'm sure we have I know we have a lot of business owners listening as well. So when it comes to scaling a business, right? Is there ever such a thing as maybe scaling beyond what your business is capable of?
Yeah. Yes. So if you get too many leads and too much traffic and you can't handle it, that could kill your business. So just a couple ways that could happen is you get too many and you can't keep up with the work. And then now you get bad reviews because people are waiting too long. They're not getting a good job done because you have so many people that you have to do. And so getting too much work, in too small of a time can crush you. But that's what we call a good problem, because if you can fix it, then you can make a lot of money. Another way is if you have, materials or things that you have to buy in order to do a job, but those materials are creating such a small margin or even no margin that you're actually losing money and you don't know. So there's a lot of companies, let's say they're just making some kind of, I don't know, wooden thing for people, and people are buying it for $50. But after he's done buying the wood and making it, he spent $48 and his margin's only $2. You can't sustain that. But he's working hard thinking he's making a lot of money just because he's working and getting a lot of orders. So he's looking at the order account and going, oh, we're making all this money. But in the account where he has bills, he's losing a bunch of money. And so, the margin is huge. You got to know those numbers. There's some businesses that will work a lot on something and didn't have the margins and end up going bankrupt because they didn't understand, especially when businesses get real, real big. Sometimes that can
happen.
And then they bring in guys, like me to figure it out, and they figure it out because they know the fundamentals and the basics. But, usually an issue is when you get too much traffic too fast. It's like going viral when you're not ready. Trust me, you don't want to go viral. You're not ready to go viral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I first learned about this in school, but I really learned about it, watching Shark Tank. Cause especially a Cuban, that used to be like his question for everyone. It's like, how much does it cost you to make this and how much are you selling it for?
Yeah.
And then a lot of the times when people would like respond with small margins, he would be like, I'm out. I don't care.
He's like,
it's not sustainable.
You gotta get crushed. I'm out.
Yeah.
You can improve on margins. Some people, you know, they think they could buy the material cheaper later and stuff like that. So there's ways.
Yeah. What's a business that you've identified, like, can be anywhere in the world where you've seen like exceptional, like, levels of scaling other than like someone like Elon, obviously.
Margins?
Well, not just margins, but just growth in general. Wait.
Growth?
Yeah.
Anything online, you can get a ton of growth. Because if you can, like e-commerce, right? Let's say you have a brand where it's like a logo on a shirt. Let's say like this hat. Because actually this is a hat I made. It's NFE, which means not for everyone, right? But to make this hat, we could do what's called like where they zip it up right away, right? Like drop shipping. So, let's say 100 people want to buy this hat. I don't have to make it for 100 people. I can set up online to where I get to how I want it to look, and then a company that drop ships can make it and ship it to those people and just take out the money for me. So I never have to do anything. So let's say if it's $5 to make and I sell it for 25, I just get $20 in my account without doing any work. The only work I have to do on the front end is bring in traffic and bring in leads. And so if I can bring in, if they can print a million, I can bring in a million. Then all I got to do is figure out a way to go viral and bring in as much traffic as I possibly can to that link or that website of people who want to buy the hat. So online stuff where you can really set it up and not touch it is the most scalable thing ever. For example, if you had a machine, Hende, where you put in a dollar and you got $2 out, how much money would you put in that machine?
Yeah, for every dollar I put in, I got two back. I mean, I'll put in as much as I can.
As much as you possibly can, right? That's business. Once you know your margins, then you find an ad that you put in a dollar and it gives you two back or more than that, then you flood that thing as much money as you can and you just let it run up. So that's really the key. And you can do that with an online business, selling anything online. You can sell information products. You can sell physical products. Information, all you got to do is watch videos, pay you to watch videos. That's crazy. Right?
Yeah.
Right. You know, if I, put together a product teaching people how to buy businesses, and then I charged them $1,000. If I got 100 people a month to buy it, it's $100,000 a month. But the hard work will be proving to people that it's something they should buy and doing a ton of content. And just constantly doing content to bring people in and building your name up and your positioning and all of that stuff. But probably information products online just scale forever. You know, Andrew Tate, he has like something crazy, like 300,000 students in his online class. What was it? Hustlers University, university.com. They're sick. I think it's more than that. But they're all paying like $45. And I think it's more than that, but just to give you guys kind of an idea, he goes online, he talks a lot of stuff to go viral. He gets a lot of attention because attention is traffic, attention is currency these days. And then 3,000 people times $45 in his thing, he's making almost $14 million a month. And all he has to do is, crazy. He just has the classes on there. You ain't gonna do that.
Exactly. And it's crazy what's possible online, really. Even like, if I look at someone like Mr. Beast, I look at Speed, guys like that, making crazy money.
And they're not even selling nothing.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, they're just making like cool content that we want to watch. And for some people want to watch Speed just walk around and talk. I mean, he has so much, charisma. It's crazy. I like to watch just some of his videos are just hilarious, or I like to watch his racing videos. Like when he does that buff guy, the morning routine guy, like that's cool. Cause me being someone who is an ex athlete and just love the body and physical, like buff guys be walking around here, like they the man when really is they not. It's really the skinny, wiry athletes who will beat them at everything. And so that, so, you know, anytime you see something that fits your worldview, you like to watch it. So.
Yeah, no doubt. What is, have you had experience? Have you had difficulty scaling your business in your experience?
Yeah, it can get hard.
What have been some of those challenges?
One is coming up with a market to message fit, a message that a market loves and follows, right? So knowing exactly what to say so that people will follow a business and love it. I'm one of those people who I don't like to be fake. I'm super authentic. And if I have to not say something or act a certain way or be fake in order to make money, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
And so that's why I went into business acquisitions and speaking on stage. And even to this day, I've lost maybe a couple months ago, I probably lost 10,000 on a speaking deal because the event planner didn't like something I said on Twitter. And so most people can only say certain things or do certain things in order to make money because of that market to message fit. So they have to be someone and put out there something that they really truly aren't. And some people could do it for 30 years. They could fake and do that. And some people's market to message fit is who they are. Now that's where it gets amazing and you just love your business, right? People who work super hard because it's just them. Right? Like Speed. That's just him. But a lot of people aren't like that. Because the thing with a market to message fit him day is you have to go to the market and figure out what they want and then create the message because you want to sell to them what they want. And then most of the time. Yep.
Not to cut you off, my bad. But, what do you think about when people say, like, when people say that people don't know what they want until you give it to them?
That is kind of true, but you still go to the market and study what the market wants, but then you create something that they might have wanted in the future instead of right now.
Okay.
But the only time you can really do that, like Apple did that with iPhones and stuff like that, is when you have so much capital, you raise so much money that you can force products on people, right? So if you have billions of dollars, you know, if you're Facebook and, people, you have so much money that you could just push it out there. Of course, people are going to get on Facebook because all their friends are on Facebook because you've marketed so much money, you know, and we don't want to get into Facebook and how Palantir and Peter Thiel and how the CIA gave them money and how. Now they're just tools to spy on people. It's not necessarily that they were the best social media. You have MySpace and Black Planet. You had things that were just as great, but they just didn't have the CIA backing and Palantir and all of that stuff. Let me take a sip of my drink. Mm-hmm. That's why we're talking about that.
You might have to listen right now.
You know, and then you got a movie and you just think, oh, Mark Zuckerberg is just the greatest. He was young and he figured it out. No, come on, man. People cheating out here. But, that works when you just, so for example, my cousin's in music and they have this special music campaign that if you can put like a couple million dollars to the campaign, you're guaranteed to get an audience, you're guaranteed to get people to like you because you flooded the market and you put so much out there that you force it into people's brains. But if you're grassroots organic and you are unfortunate to get a CIA, lump sum of money to where you can just go market it to a bunch of people, you got to go and create the perfect market to message fit for a market. You can't force anything on a market. So yes, that works, but that's very cash intensive, to put things in a market, and make them like it. Yeah, you want to start with the market, figure out what they want. People sometimes do, like things like, what do you want? What are you looking for? Where they ask the market what they want and then they go create it. But when you start from the market instead of yourself, a lot of times it might be something that, that doesn't fit with who you are all the time, unless you know, sometimes it can, but, yeah, that's one of the issues.
Wow. Yeah. And I could definitely see how that could be a challenge in scaling a business. And, I want to go back to the thing I brought up now about selling people what they don't know that they want in that particular time. I read a story about the Red Bull founder.
Mm-hmm.
And how he went on this trip to, I think it was Indonesia or Thailand or something, when he had a similar drink and he was like, I'm gonna take this to Europe basically.
Yeah.
And like, you know, even he admits like, this stuff is actually bad for you, but I'm gonna sell it to you in a way to where you think you will need it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's what was playing in my mind when you're talking about, the message to the market.
And he created the greatest message for a market. Red Bull, it gives you wings. Like the perfect messaging. But if you probably look at the ethos of that business, the beginning, I guarantee you they didn't have that messaging from the beginning. They probably pivoted and tried new messages until one lands on everyone.
Yeah.
And you have people who this is all they do. All they do is figure out the words and the propaganda. There's a guy named Edward Bernay who was the king of propaganda. He like invented breakfast. You know, breakfast wasn't a thing. Nobody even ate breakfast. But meat
really?
Companies, yeah, people didn't eat breakfast. But meat companies came to him and was like, we want to get people to eat this meat in the morning or something like that. And he was like, let me come up with a concept. And then boom, breakfast was born. Breakfast, the most important meal of the day. You have a lot to do all day. You need the energy. And then like they created breakfast. Breakfast wasn't even a thing. Like,
so the whole thing about it being the most important meal of the day is
that was made up
propaganda, basically.
Propaganda. Yes.
People, I thought there was like actual science.
No, that's not no science. Science is propaganda, Hende. It's propaganda. It's fake science. This is one of the things that, people kind of, you know, get annoyed with me about is people don't have the discernment to know what works and what doesn't work. It's not about what's real or what's facts. It's what works and what doesn't work. And everyone here knows that you have way more energy and get way more done when you don't eat till 12 or 1 or 2 p.m. Everyone knows that. So why do they you know how you eat breakfast? Are you ready to take a nap already? You just woke up.
Yeah. But like, I disagree. You need something in the morning, like just a little fuel, you know, cause if you don't eat in the morning, like you're the hunger, like it gets to you.
I don't get hungry. You know,
especially if you work out.
Let me tell you my morning. I wake up, walk, make coffee, drink coffee. I sit at the desk and I work 3 hours. Then after that, like after this interview, then I'll get up, I'll get more caffeine. Then I go to the gym, still haven't eaten, and I'll work out to 2 p.m. It's only 11 right now. I haven't had food yet. And then at 2 p.m., I'll have my first meal. And I feel great. I feel amazing.
And when you have your second meal?
I'll probably have a snack at 5 and then my last meal at 8. That's it. I don't eat 16 to 18 hours in between. And I feel great. And I got some muscle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, the listeners can't see, but you are yoked up, but I'm saying like, I don't know. I feel like you train your body to.
But even if you ate breakfast, right? You probably eat a light breakfast, just something for your stomach. You don't eat eggs and bacon and sausage like they said in the propaganda. You need to eat a whole pig.
Oh, man.
No, you know, propaganda is so strong. Science is anytime you see science, like you see, oh, we have data and we did a test. I'm like, nah. But I do employ people to do their own science, and science is a process of testing. Come up with a theory, try it, test it, and then see if it worked. If it worked, then keep doing it. And then if it doesn't, stop doing it. All right. Because, the science told us in 2020 about that thought. And now we see that, now we see it was created by Bill Gates and Epstein, your homie Epstein and them were putting this together for years. So, you have to have the discernment to know what's right, what works and what doesn't, not what's right and wrong, what works and what doesn't. And, me, I'm the type, I look at something, I'll be like, man, get that out of here, man. I ain't doing that. That's crazy. You know, like here in America, everybody's on these shots that make you skinny. It's called GLP-1.
Oh, the Ozempic.
And retatrutide. I'm like, nah, I'm straight.
Yeah.
Nope. Not for my family. My mama, you think I should try? Nope. If you want to lose weight, mama, this is what you do. So, and you gotta know this stuff so you can protect your family. Cause they don't care about your family. They just want to make money, which leads me to the last one we're going to talk about is education. I know people love education and think you should go to school, get your bachelor's, get your master's. But you know what the number one form of marketing is, Hende? Education. That's why we go and we look up education on things on YouTube before we buy it. Education is the strongest form of marketing. And so we're indoctrinated in these huge global systems that are just big propaganda machines. And we got to live in them because, you know, they're here. But also you got to have the eyes and the discernment to go, nah, that ain't it. That ain't it. You know what? Let me go to my Bible and verify this information first. You know, that's truly how I think.
So as we wrap up and as I was listening to you talk right now and still trying to tie it back to the whole scaling of business conversation that we were having, would you say to scale a business, a form of, I don't want to use the word propaganda, but a form of like that kind of messaging is necessary? Like, can you do it without that kind of messaging?
Only if it's a need, something people need, like toilet paper. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So the businesses we're buying are environmental services businesses that people have to have. So you don't need a marketing message to fit. It's not something like some clothes or things that people don't really need. It's just what they want. This is stuff you have to have. And so things that you have to have, the government will pay you to deliver them to people. So you get government contracts on them and people have to get it. So you'll notice things that you have to have. What do you usually do? You go online and you search for them. Like if your tooth hurts, you go, tooth pain near me or something like that. And so you want to be that first option on the internet, for those things that people have to have. And those leads will come in forever. As long as you're where you need to be, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm. So in situations like that, it's important to have worked on the business so that, you know, when a pandemic comes and people are buying toilet paper at crazy levels, that you're able to supply it.
Yeah. I had a friend who, he was making, I would say $200 million a year. Every quarter he was making $250,000. And all he did was connected a hospital with, a manufacturing company in China that made masks. And remember during COVID, needed a ton of them. So they were just spending tons of money on masks. And my boy brokered that deal and was making like $1 million. Was like making $1 million a year on that. To every time they did a shipment, he was making $250,000.
Crazy. Crazy what's possible out there. So now as we wrap up, is there any last words you'd like to leave with the listeners when it comes to scaling a business? Or actually, I'm sorry. Before we get to that one, let's briefly touch on like scaling as an individual. If you get what I'm trying to say with that one, like, well, what are some things you can do to scale yourself as an individual?
Get in shape. If you are in shape, and that means it's easier to breathe, easier to run, you'll have more energy. We talked about this on a past episode. Successful people have two things that average people don't have. They have a ton of energy. There's a book on this called The Hypermanic Edge. Tons and tons of energy. You ever see your kids jumping around, jumping up and down on the desk, and you're like, oh, you got too much energy. That's the type of energy successful people have until people beat them down and tell them they shouldn't have that much energy. But successful people just still have it. And then they have conscientiousness. Another word for that is they're organized. So if you have a ton of energy you can get things done all day and you're organized, you will be able to scale. And the best way to do that is make sure you're eating clean and make sure that you are working out. If you're putting garbage in your body, you will not be able to scale because you will not have the energy to scale. And if you're putting 87 gas into a Ferrari, it will not run like it's supposed to do. So you have to get that taken care of. Once you do that, you're going to sleep better. You're going to wake up earlier. You're going to have more energy. Now get organized. How can I get more leads? How can I get more traffic? How can I bring a better experience to my customers so they love me and want to come back and want to give me referrals and makes me want to...
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at furmanbrock.com. We care.
If you lost your show, all of that is good to ngupo. Oma wa o tomono okujako NHP. Genge wa longify longifo lili pedulo wa wo haku. Olo hali piti kwa efiku ne fiku. Mefiloshi shelo haku wo e. Owa washi mali wa o shosha kupako. Washika we delwa kom to alandolako. Kashi. koma pungulo ena shano unjolo welewe. Otodulu okulongifa oma uwaoe, wa hupuko, opo unamiti toshiningi momikalo dihapungashi. Okufutila po oimali waishona, oyo hodulu okupolwa, ulifutila ove mwene, oma yakulo olu hapu, hakala ina akwatelwa, mo uwawe kwa folo elu unamiti. Ile, otodulu nokuli, okupitifa po emwe didonumba, tokala inofuta ea kulolo elu unamiti. Kuyalele uhapu, talela po nhp.com.na. Ema ngono malandola fano ododi na okulandulwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP will about you.
You come back and want to give me referrals and makes me want to...